So hello everybody and welcome to another Jeanette's Autism Show. This one is a little different because I felt the need to actually speak to you all, just myself this time without a guest, and just tell you, I know some of the things I'm strongly believe and some of the things that I think about autism advocacy and some of the issues that are facing us today, and some issues more broadly as well. I did feel the need. I've had a bit of a, what I would call, a long, dark tea time of the soul. Thankfully, it ended, as it should end, in an epiphany. So I like to share epiphanies, and some things grew up around that I thought would be nice to share with you. So I hope you're all having a lovely time, wherever you may be, and whatever you may be doing. So I guess, you know, just about me. So some of you will have come across me. I'm an autistic self-advocate. I'm 42. I'm a woman. I identify pretty much as a non-binary gender person, though, and as queer, as being part of the sort of asexual end of the queer spectrum, although I've identified as lesbian in the past because I didn't know that asexual was an option. This is an issue for people. I have a cat. I work full-time for the Australian Public Service. Been there for 10 years. I write books and articles and every other thing you can imagine someone writing, apart from novels because I'm not good at them. Everything else I write. I live in a little flat in Canberra called Whimsy Manor. It has lots of art. I have quite a happy life, mostly. I have some mental health challenges that are always sort of giving me a bit of a challenge, but it's okay. I recognise that life comes with good bits and bad bits. So just a very brief little, my two-minute life story. I was born in England, lived there until I was 11. Primary school was lovely, sort of, most of the time. Had a wonderful principal who sort of took over when I was about 8, and she saw me as gifted and talented. I have an absurdly high IQ and all those sorts of things, so I was very academic. Not that everyone with a high IQ is academic, and not that everyone with a low IQ is not intelligent, because these things are a fairly subjective test. Anyway. I went to high school and it was not so much a good place. I experienced loads of bullying, which left me very negative. So my early adult years were spent seeking out difficult, nasty, negative things. I always see it as like, you know, that idea of Stockholm Syndrome, where people are kidnapped and they start to sympathise with their attackers and their kidnappers. I think I had that with the bullies. I wanted all those horrible things they said about me and how I'd never achieve anything and all of that. I wanted that to come true. So I made it happen. It's quite easy to destroy your life if you're intending to. I ended up in some terrible places. I spent some time in prison. Nasty criminal record. This is all 20 years or more ago, but still very shameful. I'm not happy about that in my life. Huge housing issues, poverty. I was on benefits, on government benefits for almost 15 years. It was a very difficult start to life, but thankfully I had this thing. It's called the Jeanette motivation. I am a very motivated person. So I got to that point. I don't know if anyone does 12-step fellowships like Alcoholics Anonymous or Narcotics Anonymous or GROW or anything like that, but the concept of those sorts of programs is premised on the idea that you get to a point where you can't keep going the way you are. You will either die or you would change. And I got to that point. I wasn't going to a 12-step fellowship at that point, but I did get to that sort of point in my life where I thought, if I keep doing what I'm doing, I might as well throw everything away, so I need to change. And I decided I wanted to be ordinary. That's a very funny thing because it sounds dreadful. Actually, what I meant by ordinary was being socially included, to actually be part of society, to be part of the world, to be contributing through taxes and all those things. It wasn't a very easy path to get there, and it was always, the whole way, I was sort of beset by all these things that could have derailed my path, but thankfully didn't. So the first thing I did, I figured I wanted a professional job. I thought the best way of getting that would be to get a university degree so that I could get a graduate job. I'd heard about such things, and lots of people had told me, if you go to university and get a degree, that looks really good when you apply for jobs. And I thought, well, that's what I'll do. So I went to university for 6 years. I ended up getting a master's degree in fine art, of all things. Not that I desperately wanted to be an artist, but I thought it would be an enjoyable subject to get my degree in. And it was. It's lovely. Loved university. Became quite an overachiever at that point. Then along the line there somewhere, I got asked to do a course as well, a technical and further education course around assessment and workplace training, which is a teaching qualification, a certificate for sort of trade certificate level. And the interesting thing about this course is that all the people doing it were autistic, were all on the spectrum, and it was being arranged by an autism service provider. And in this course, it took me a long time to accept my diagnosis. So I'd never really been in a room full of other autistic people. And it was amazing. It was really empowering. And I got to know this lady called Donna Williams, who I'd never come across because I wasn't involved in the autism world. But it turned out to my, how old I was then, 29-year-old self, that Donna was a very exciting person. I mean, not just because she'd written 9 books at that point, but she did all this advocacy work and she had this wonderful life. And I thought, wow, this is great. And Donna became my mentor. And a lot of people had said to me at the time, so I was doing my honours in fine art at the time, and I did lots of little text-based wordy sentences, sort of artworks based on words. And lots of people said, your writing is beautiful, you need to write a book. And I'm like, no, don't be silly. But then when Donna, who'd written 9 books and knew all about it, said to me, there is nothing like your story in the autism literature, go write your book. I thought that was maybe the time to do it. So I did this thing and I was supported by Donna. I'm a very sickening person because it took me 4 weeks to draft my autobiography. It was the first serious piece of writing I ever did in my life, and it was published by the first publisher it went to. And suddenly I went from being someone on benefits in public housing with a dubious past to being an author. That was a different thing. That was a totally different thing. As an author, I had the confidence to apply for 2 positions, one in the Victorian Public Service and one in the Commonwealth Public Service. So I applied for 2 graduate jobs. This is insane. I look at this now and think, how on earth did that happen? But I applied for the first 2 professional jobs I ever applied for. I was shortlisted for one and successful in the other. Now, that's pretty amazing anyway. But add to that all my various mental illnesses and dubious pasts and all sorts of nasty things, and autism can be a barrier to employment and perceptions and things. I was successful for a graduate job out of 2 applications. It's sort of unheard of. And I look at it now and I think, wow, that's amazing. At the time, I had nothing to compare it to. But I joined the public service and absolutely loved it. I have a wonderful department. It's changed a few times. When the government's changed, the remit of the departments are tweaked. But I have had a wonderful time in my department, and I've been promoted twice. I'm involved in autism advocacy at work and disability advocacy through the Ability Network, which I'm one of the chairs of. It's wonderful. It's a great thing. I'm very proud to work where I do, and I think it's really changed my life in a big way. So the main thing that I do now, apart from my paid work, my other main activity, which is really my passion, is autism advocacy. And this is, I love this. It is, you know, the other day I was giving a talk and I actually said out loud, I hadn't articulated this before, but I said out loud, as I realised at the same time, this is my life's work. This is my passion. This is why I am here. Now, that's pretty nice to get to do the thing which is why you are here. So, as an autism advocate, I'm not one of those autism advocates who only thinks about their own experience. I try to learn as much as I can about autistic experiences more generally and more broadly beyond my own experience, because I think I'm more valuable in talking about autism as somebody who doesn't just speak as Jeanette, but who has tried to understand and relate to other people's stories and experiences too. As an autism advocate, I spent 7 years not accepting my diagnosis. So prior to me being who I am now, with this person who gives talks and everything, I was someone who, when I was diagnosed, I didn't accept it. I thought it was rubbish. I thought it was validating what the bullies said. I thought it was actually, meant that I'd be a nerd for the rest of my life and therefore I would never have any friends. And you can understand that I didn't really want that. So that wasn't something that I persisted with. I thought, let's just let that one go. But as I got older, and importantly, as I got to a point where I valued myself as I was, rather than wanting to be accepted by other people at any cost, when I realised I was a decent human being who, you know, could actually be autistic and it didn't matter, and it's actually a good identity. It's a good thing to identify with because it is accurate. It is the culture I belong in, or one of the cultures I belong in. At that point, I said, yes, let's do this thing. Let's actually accept our autism. And 3 years after that, I'd written the book. So I got thrust into the limelight, so to speak, in the autism community. And I remember giving talks. I never gave talks to a big group of people, thankfully, at first. But I remember giving talks and thinking, I hope they don't ask any questions because I don't know anything about anything. So it was very terrifying, but I felt the need to do it. And I, it actually, I grew in confidence, and it took a long time. It was a bit of a slow burn with my actual level of recognition and profile. And it's funny because I actually almost preferred it when I didn't have so much profile because I was just me. Whereas now, you know, people might think I stand for something or something like that, whereas I'm still just me and I'm just telling my story and trying to put things across in a way that helps other people. I don't ever say I speak on behalf of autistic people or on behalf of anyone else. I tell my story, and thankfully within my story there's a lot of relatable stuff that other people can relate to that are on the spectrum, or that are people who are you know, who love people on the spectrum or who work with people on the spectrum. Identity is really funny because I have a number of identities. I actually have a mental health condition, which is a very nasty schizophrenia thing, which makes my life quite scary and challenging. And, you know, every day that's good, I never take for granted. I'm always very grateful for good days because they're few and far between sometimes. And that is part of my identity too. My various gender and sexuality identities are part of that. My history, you know, and I don't go around saying, oh, I'm a criminal, because I'm not. That's from a very long time ago. But it's added, you know, that understanding and knowledge has added to who I am. I actually was talking to a friend, I was down in Melbourne last week, and I was talking to a friend there about that stuff and that level of criminal identity. And she said, well, you know, I don't care about that. I love you as who you are. That's, you know, that stuff is irrelevant. And I thought, well, it is irrelevant, but it follows me around. It's always with me. You know, it's a regret. And so that is sadly part of my identity. So identities are quite interesting. I find within the autism community, a lot of people get quite serious about how other people identify. And if someone says, I'm a person with autism, then people say, no, you should say you're an autistic person. In my mind, identity is a very personal choice. If somebody says to me, I would say I have Asperger's or I am a person with autism, I'm not going to deny that to them. I'm not going to challenge them on that. That is their identity. And I know that a lot of us, particularly who are the more sort of involved advocates and activists and things, we do say I am autistic, and there's a reason for that. For me, the reason I say that is because I don't see autism as an add-on to my personality. I don't see it as something additional to who I am. I see my mental illness as something additional to who I am, but I wouldn't want to be me without autism because it is integral to who I am. So I always say I'm autistic because it is owning that identity first. But that being said, if other people don't identify that way, it's really none of my business. I do find, I mean, my job is really about educating, I think, rather than telling people off. I don't like telling people off. Unless what they're professing is dangerous or prejudiced or anything like that, I do like to bring people along with me because I think you end up with a better sort of relationship. You can continue your relationship with that person, hopefully, and continue educating them. And sometimes you can't do that. Some people, yes, you do need to berate them and say, no, that's not cool. But, you know, it's a difficult thing. Just moving on to diversity and respect. So lately, across the world, across the globe, there have been indications that there is a growth in, I guess, bigotry and sentiment that I would consider quite prejudiced and unhelpful. To that, I would say I find that very concerning. It really upsets me because being prejudiced, you're not saying I don't like a novel. You're saying I don't like a whole group of people. And they're actually individuals. They're like you. They're like your mum. They're like your partner. They're like your kids. You know, people who are prejudiced, they cease to see the human. But actually, all those people that are on the receiving end of discrimination and victimisation are actually people just like us. I like to think we're more similar than we are different. You know, I saw a TED talk actually recently, which was from Canada. It was this year's TED conference. And it was a geneticist who was talking about the human genome. And he actually brought onto the stage with him about 5 bookcases. And he'd sequenced, or someone had sequenced the genome, you know, into the GACT letters for the DNA. And there were millions of pages in this thing. And the differences between human beings were 1,000 pages from that million. So it was a tiny weeny bit that makes us different. We are so similar, and if we focus, particularly if we blame people who are different, that is unhelpful. And I find it really hard. I'm an autistic person. I was on the receiving end of prejudice for many years. I still am sometimes, thankfully not as much as I used to be. My autistic friends are on the receiving end of prejudice and discrimination and sometimes violence. This is not good. And I always feel, as somebody with a number of diversity groups myself, it would be absolutely unconscionable for me to criticise or be bigoted against someone from another group that faces stigma and discrimination. That is really poor form. I would not do that, regardless. And also, individuals are individuals. You talk about racism, you say, I don't like people from this country. Well, how on earth can you say that? Do you know every single person from that country? Do you not like any of them? It's ridiculous. It's nonsensical. It's stupid. It just makes no sense at all. People are people. They're individuals. Some people from one country will be like something. Other people from the same country will be like something else. It's just illogical. On the rational level, it's illogical. And on a human level, it's not right. I find some of the diversities are like people with various intellectual disability or autism or Tourette's or some of those neurological conditions do tend to be on the receiving end of a lot of discrimination, particularly in school settings, you know, and get bullied and victimised. And this happened to me for many years. It's not okay, ever. One of the things I'm seeing now is a lot of trans people are being really targeted, and I think that's appalling. I think just because the problem with being autistic, and I think one of the problems with being trans in terms of discrimination, is that we tend to be quite visible. You can tell that there is some kind of difference. And some people sadly feel really threatened by that. I would say that, could you imagine, if you see somebody on the receiving end of prejudice, imagine if it were you. Imagine if you looked a bit different and people could pick up on that straight away and put that in your mind. And you know, then relate that to yourself. And so next time you see someone who you might find confronting because of their difference, see them as yourself, see them like you, because really, you know, people are people, and it's not right to discriminate against people because of anything, any characteristic. And I really feel for people who are on the receiving end of those things. Some of the issues autistic people face beyond stigma and discrimination, there are a number of structural issues and service failures and all that kind of thing for autistic people. We struggle with a number of things. People often don't understand us. It's like we have a different communication. I see it as cultural, almost like a language. I attend an awful lot of autism conferences, and one of the things at an autism conference, thankfully these days, the organisers will set up a quiet room that you can go to if you're on the spectrum and everything's a bit overwhelming. I spend most of the conference in there when I'm not giving my talk because I just find the whole thing a bit much. So I go in those places at lunchtime, you know, in the conference, there'll be like 20 or 30 people in there, all on the spectrum. And then I'm always reminded of that concept we get given that autistic people's communication is deficient or lacking. We have communication issues. When I'm in a room full of 30 autistic people, we do not have communication issues. We understand one another generally. So that makes a mockery of the idea that autistic communication is deficient. It becomes deficient when a non-autistic person comes in and doesn't understand it. So if you've got a room full of autistic people with one non-autistic person, they will be, I guess, disadvantaged in some sense in terms of understanding the communication. It doesn't make their communication deficient either. I see it like French and German. Autistic people are speaking French. If everyone's speaking French, you can all communicate and it's fine. Non-autistic people, they're all metaphorically speaking German. If you speak German, that's fine. You get one in a room full of the other, they just speak a different language. And so unless one or other learns the language of the other one, they won't be able to communicate. Now, of course, mostly autistic people try to learn the neurotypical language because, you know, there's more of them and our society is much more focused on the neurotypical experience. I like it when neurotypical people try to learn the autistic language. I do like that. There's a couple of people I'll mention who I consider wonderful allies, and one of them would be Judy Brewer AO from the chair of the Autism Cooperative Research Centre. I would say she's a wonderful ally and she's supported me in many ways. And of course the other one, who I'm sure most of us do know this if we've read his wonderful book Neurotribes, but my friend Steve Silberman is a wonderful ally. And I think, you know, these people who've learnt or gone quite a long way towards learning the autistic language, so that's a good thing. But sadly, a lot of people don't understand us and our experience, and this can relate in a whole load of ways. If you're accessing mental health services and you're an autistic person, that can be very, very fraught. You know, this can be, I know from personal experience, you can get misdiagnoses, unhelpful treatment, being dismissed and invalidated and gaslighted and all these things when you're trying to access help for a mental health condition. You know, it's not good for those things to happen anyway. When you're trying to access assistance, having them happen is not so good. Education can be really challenging, particularly for autistic kids and for young people in university or further education settings. The educational attainment level at all levels for autistic people is very low, or much lower than it should be. And so this is something we need to work with educators and stuff to actually build that inclusivity. Employment is an area where autistic people really are disadvantaged, unfortunately. And there's more work being done on all these things, but there's still a ways to go. And employment really is quite a difficult issue because the strategies to actually deliver employment to people, you know, like getting a job, application process and interviews and things, tend to be not very autism friendly. And so we need to rethink this. And the funny thing about services, improving services for autistic people, I heard someone once say that with kids, you know, the autistic kids are the canary in the mine. So if something works for them, you're actually going to be assisting other kids. So, and the same in the workplace. You know, it's not just accessibility isn't just for the person who needs the accessibility. It actually tends to benefit others. We do have a lot of difficulties as autistic people, even now. Mental health issues are very common and can be quite difficult to get access to treatment for, and quite difficult to actually pinpoint for the person. They might not be able to access their emotions, so it might get very bad before they even seek help. They might not know that they can seek help or where to go. These are big problems. Social isolation is a real issue as well. Autistic people can be very, even if they've got people around them, they might feel completely alone. Thankfully, things like social media and online groups and stuff are really helping with that, but even so, there is an issue. And even access to diagnosis. Some people, there's economic issues or waiting lists or geographical issues. They might be in a remote location. And so even getting a diagnosis that enables them or their kids to access services can be quite tricky. Just some thoughts. I mean, I go through life and I always used to say, I mean, I've got a meme that I make and said, hey, let's do this thing, let's change the world. I always talk about changing the world, but lately I've been thinking about changing the world because I'm not changing the whole world. I'm changing little bits of the world. I can't change all the world. I saw someone saying, you know, love and kindness are fine, but we need to, you know, fight back against bad things. And I thought, yeah, but for me, love and kindness is what I can do. And those connections between individuals are really important, and respecting others and setting an example and all of those things. I'm not going to change the world. I wouldn't want to. It's not my thing. I'm not brave. I'm not tough. I'm just a little lady who quite likes her comfort. But that being said, I don't like the idea that autistic people, you know, are the receiving end of prejudice and difficulties. And what I do, I had an epiphany, actually. I was feeling really powerless recently for a number of reasons. And I thought, I can't do anything. There's no point me doing anything at all. And I went and gave a talk. Now, it was not a talk to a big room of people. It was a talk to a very small room, but there's about 50 people in the room. And I got up on stage and I felt so disillusioned, and I got up on stage and I just spoke, and I spoke from my heart, and I said, as I was speaking, I realised that what I was doing was changing the world, not in a big momentous way. I don't know that many people can change the world in a big momentous way, but reaching those people and sharing my insights and thoughts and, you know, giving a good example was just a wonderful thing. And I felt so, I had an epiphany at that talk, and that was where I said, this is my life's work. And I thought, yeah, it is. Now, I think it's really important for everyone, because we can all change the world in that way. You know, we can all show an example of love and kindness. We can all show acceptance and respect and inclusion. These are things we can all do in our lives, and they're a good thing. And, you know, as I say, we're more similar than we are different. So, Mr. Kitty would like to say hello as well. He's been very good lately. He is my little alter ego, my little black shadow. He's a good boy and he enables me, in fact, to do what I do. I was talking to a friend at work who's actually a rehabilitation case manager too, and we're talking about psychologists, and I said, I don't really do psychologists because, I mean, you know, I've written a book on mental health, but most of the strategies they're going to give me I already know, so I much prefer to have someone to talk to. And I thought about it, and I thought, you know, that Mr. Kitty, he purrs when I talk to him and goes snuggle. And for autistic people, a lot of autistic people, pets and connectedness to nature and all of those things are really, really, really important, and they are for me. So thank you for listening to my little rant. It's I haven't done one of these for a while. I think we do need to value one another and to value what we have and, you know, support one another in life. So thank you, and it's lovely talking to you always. Even though I don't see you, I'm here and you're there. Okay, thank you. Bye.